Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Damn it, I missed my cue. All right, and tonight our favorite show is The Defenders, Season 1, brought to you by Marvel and Netflix. Hello, everyone. Welcome to TV Party Tonight. I am your host, your mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And joining me to talk about The Defenders, Iron Fist, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, The Defenders, is Robert Winfrey. How you doing, Robert?
The universe marches towards its inevitable heat death. The Earth continues rotating, slowly going through its statute of orbital decay. And life remains a sketchy proposition at best.
Did you go blind staring at the sun, or did you follow the 8 zillion news reports saying, don't look directly into the sun during the eclipse, you fucking idiots?
I didn't actually need any news reports to tell me that you shouldn't look into the sun during an eclipse. Because I, A, had competent teachers, and B, paid attention.
Well, good for you. Go ahead.
No, that's it. I'm mocking both the education system as it's become and the average student for being a petulant jackass who thinks that access to the internet has made them some kind of unholy god where they don't need the opinions, perspectives, work, talents, or time that other people have put into actually, mastering various subjects.
Let's talk about the
My nihilism and misanthropy are just showing right through, aren't they?
They are. Pull your skirt down. Your nihilism is showing. Now listen. Let's talk about the Defenders for a moment, shall we?
Oh, must we?
Now, I generally don't have much negative to say about Marvel. They have a plan. They follow their plan for the most part. So, certainly plans are subject to change, but for the most part, they have a roadmap, and they ride that line between following the roadmap and allowing creative people to do creative things with their properties. And on the movie side of things, this has worked pretty well without many flaws. On the TV side of things, it depends. Your mileage may vary. Every single one of the Marvel Netflix shows has, I wouldn't say split the audience, but they've all been the subject of debate. Many people have liked the Daredevil season 1 and season 2. Many people had struggled with one or both of them. Many people thought Jessica Jones was a revelation. We know people personally who thought Jessica Jones was the worst piece of shit ever captured on film. Many people loved Luke Cage and thought it was a modern-day parable of the struggle of the black man. It was a symbol of, you know, the hoodie was the symbol of the black struggle against the man and the police and all of that. And other people thought one too many rap concerts.
And to be fair, that was not my only... Hang on. Neither was that my only complaint, but for some reason it's the one you've all latched onto. And I'm not the only one who had that complaint.
I wasn't just talking about you, motherfucker, okay? I was doing a summation of what was the biggest criticism of that show. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, calm the fuck down. Are you all right? Do you need a beer or something? You want me to get you some pot?
You know I don't imbibe either of those substances.
You want a hug? Do you want me to just give you a hug?
No, thank you. I might catch something.
Yeah, go. Feel like you're knocking me.
That's how cancer works,
now?
Right? Like, I touch you and I get it?
Yes. Cancer is airborne. You gotta calm down now, or do I have to yell at you again?
Yeah, you'll probably have to yell at me again.
Probably, Mr. Interrupty. And then there was Iron Fist, who, you know, tended to garner a lot of negative criticism from the professional critics, professionals in quotes, but seemed to gather more favor among the comic book fans, especially those that already knew the guy was white. But I digress.
Do your research, people.
I wasn't in the room when they conceptualized the street-level Marvel Netflix series Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. I wasn't there, as Bruce Prichard would say. But if you'll recall, they were going to go one season apiece and then do the Defenders. But Daredevil was so popular and caught such fire that they did a second season of Daredevil around the same time that they did the first season of Jessica Jones. And subsequently, they've all been renewed for Daredevil would be season 3, but Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist have all been renewed for second seasons. But as I said, the original plan to bop the man was one season apiece, then do the Defenders. And I feel like that's as far as they planned it out. Like, they had, you know, Thanos was the big bad that they were building towards. And they had been building towards Thanos since Iron Man, roughly. I don't believe they had a big bad planned for the Defenders. I just think they decided, let's do individual series, and then let's do a super team up with these four characters, and we'll figure it out along the way, which is fine, except that then they added a second season of Daredevil, and I feel like, and this is what I'm getting to, and I'll allow you to jump in after this, I feel like the biggest problem with the Defenders season one is that it was cobbled together out of the corner they painted themselves in with the details of Daredevil Season 2 and Iron Fist. It has fuck all to do with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, so write them right out. But Daredevil is where we get the hand and where they introduce the Black Sky, which is the resurrected Elektra. The hand reappears in Iron Fist and plays a major role as they are the big bad, and that is where we meet Bakuda Matata. And I feel like they went, okay, here's what we've established. Well, we don't want to just invent something out of whole cloth, and we've done put away the biggest bad we could, you know, we've got on the street level, who is the Kingpin, who they're probably bringing back for season 3. Of Daredevil, so we'll have him fight the hand. But the hand doesn't have any natural leadership, so... Well,
in fact, I feel
like one of them
heard my puns pertaining to the hand and thought, you know, that's not a bad idea.
The hand has no natural leadership other than Madame Gao, and we were like, all right, let's invent a character, and we'll have Sigourney Weaver play her, And we'll talk about what happens after that. But that's what I feel like this was. I feel like it was cobbled together bits and pieces of Daredevil Season 2 and Iron Fist, and they were like, fuck, we don't have a strong idea here. Let's just throw something at the wall and see what sticks and hope that the Avengers effect will take hold. That is to say, our narrative may be weak, but it'll be carried by the strength of the event itself. And your mileage may vary with how successful that was, but that's what I think. That's my surmising of the Defenders and how it came to be. What do you think, Robert?
I don't think you're wrong there. I generally agree. I think the biggest problem was not necessarily that they didn't go with Kingpin, which, I mean, look, you and I have spoken at length about how awesome Vincent D'Onofrio's portrayal of Wilson Fisk is. But there's plenty, I mean, there are other characters, there's other ways you could go with that. You don't, it's not the biggest necessity that, well, we must bring back this character. If you set up an appropriate counterpart to, you know, one degree or another within reason. And unfortunately, they didn't. I mean, really, had they even hinted throughout a few of the other shows that, you know, there was this problem within the hand, that there was, you know, the leadership setup that they have, which works fine. It's just, like you said, kind of thrown together rather than carefully planned out. And which is kind of sad because, A, you have a pretty solid character that Sigourney Weaver is set up to play. You have, you know, the interactions between all the various hand leaders that, I mean, all you need, and I mean this in all sincerity, really all you needed for this was to have each one of the Defenders square off with one of the hypothetical fingers of the hand, or at least mention them. You know, I mean, we all know that Jessica Jones was about just, you know, a damaged woman being damaged and trying to deal with that. But it wouldn't have been too terribly difficult to at least reference other goings on besides just her and the Purple Man for the whole show. In fact, I think that was one of the things we talked about when we reviewed it, that was a slight weakness of that show. And you and I both were kind of fall on the side of, you know, there aren't that many negative things to say about it.
I think my biggest problem, like I said, is that when they decided they were going to do four seasons of individual heroes and then a team show, they didn't have a big bad planned out already. They came up with the shit as time went on and as they continued to use ideas for other series. And then they don't have anything strong enough to bring them together, so they're having to invent things and then do away with them just as quickly. I mean, I don't want to skip ahead. I want to go episode by episode, but I feel like there's an elephant in the room that needs to be dealt with. So let's just talk about it right off the top of the bat, okay? Right off the bat here, top of the bat. Listen to me. Let's talk about Elektra and Sigourney Weaver.
I learned the specific word for mixing metaphors, and I can't remember it anymore. Sad, because it was a cool word.
So they, with all the media and marketing they did, Sigourney Weaver was supposed to be the big bad in this thing, right? She's essentially the head of the hand,
the thumb, if
there can be such a thing. She's the thumb. she's the
most important one. It is the one that separates us from all other animals, except for, I think it's raccoons that actually have opposable thumbs.
Okay. That's because I don't want to go off on a tangent arguing this point. Fine. She's the thumb of the hand. She's the big bad. And then she does absolutely nothing for the entire duration of the series that she's in. And then she's finally killed by Elektra. To the point where I have to ask, why did they invent this character in the first place? Why didn't they just have Madame Gao do the same role and, you know, and established from the beginning, the black sky is meant to be the thumb of the hand. The black sky is meant to be the leader of the hand. That's what this has all been about, that the hand has been leaderless and disparate, and what the hand needs is a sturdy leadership, and that is the black sky, and we have finally found the vessel for the black sky to take hold, and that's this broad Elektra. And established from the get-go that she is the one leading the charge. And then if you want to introduce this stupid idea of, you know, what the hand is after is immortality, and they're, you know, and it took all of their resources that they had of immortality to make themselves immortal, bringing her back to life. So, you know, Midland Circle. I mean, after I watched it and I thought about it, I'm like, oh, okay. So this whole thing has been about there be dragons beneath New York City, and they needed to harvest the bones in order to get the material to be immortal. Got it. Dumb, but at least it's something. But again, I say, if Elektra was going to be your big bad, it should have been established with Madame Gao at the beginning, and there shouldn't have been a Sigourney Weaver character. I felt like, and to me, I'm not just picking up plot elements here. This is the problem with the entire show. Things are established, and then they go nowhere. They serve no purpose. A friend of the show, Pat Mullen, brought up an example. There's a bit with Foggy and Jerry Hogarth that is introduced and then summarily dropped like a bad volleyball series. Okay, it's just bumped up and then fucking falls to the ground. It goes nowhere. That's the Defenders in a nutshell. Kung fu fighting and plot elements that go nowhere for no apparent reason whatsoever. That's not to say that I hate the show. It has so many problems. It hurts my heart because I wanted to love it. An event show like this should have been so much better. And considering how long ago did the first Daredevil come out? How long have they been working on this? It hurts my heart that a company is, well, this isn't fucking Warner Brothers in DC, okay? This isn't the Dark Universe. This isn't Sony. This is Marvel and Disney. These people know what they're doing. And yet with this street level Netflix series, it just feels like they're going off the cuff. You know, they're not thinking things through, and they're just kind of throwing stuff out there just to say, they, you know, look, it's the Defenders, and hope that's enough. I'm going to let you speak to that, and then we got to get into the episode by episode. But are you picking up what I'm putting down? Do you feel me?
Well, look, this show in particular, and to an extent, this falls on, you know, the whole, you know, street level universe. This feels like Vince McMahon went to Vince Russo and said, "Pal, I need Roman Reigns to be over." In this case, Roman Reigns being Elektra. And there is no oversight. There is no. This is Vince Russo style of storytelling. You know, random swerves where the people who are supposed to be less interesting wind up being more interesting. And we irrationally focus on the one character that we all really, I think, could do without.
Yes, I don't remember her being a favorite of Daredevil Season 2. I remember that also was a bit uneven where we all went, yay, the Punisher. Aw, the Punisher's gone now. Elektra, yuck.
Here, to that, I need to reiterate what was said when, you know, you, Pat, and I sat down to talk about Daredevil Season 2. It's really not – I would love to blame the actress just because I like blaming thespians. This isn't her fault. We said that in Daredevil Season 2. Like, she does as good a job as can be reasonably expected given the material she is given.
Hey, she's 100 times better than Jennifer Garner.
That's not hard. Jennifer Garner is pretty terrible.
It is a fact. I'm just saying it's a fact. 100 times better.
Yeah, and again, it's a cry. This is like, again, and I bring up Roman Reigns just because I feel it's an appropriate analog if you're a professional wrestling fan. There's more Roman Reigns. You will like Roman Reigns. And the vast majority of the audience goes, no, not really. Like, just please, don't be on television anymore. The showrunners for both Daredevil Season 2 and apparently Defenders are doing the same thing. Here's Elektra. You'll like her. Here's more Elektra. She's going to play a more important role. Okay, but did you actually flesh out the character? What? No, more Elektra. Ah, damn it.
All right. We begin the Defenders Episode 1, the H word. We are establishing characters. We are tying together the loose ends from each of the series. Well, Daredevil, Matt Murdock has given up being Daredevil. Luke Cage has cleared his name and is being released from prison. The Iron Fist, I am the immortal Iron Fist. Oh, so you are. Is off with his Colleen Wing, and they are hunting the Hand hither and thither. And Jessica Jones is dealing with having done murdered the Purple Man. That's where we are in season one. Episode one. The important thing here is that Misty Knight has informed Luke Cage that there are local kids who have been getting involved with a mysterious business and ending up dead. So that gets him involved with things. We are introduced to the Sigourney Weaver character, Alexandria, who is told that all of her major organs are failing and she has little time to live, so she informs Madame Gao to speed up their plans, and there's an earthquake that tears through New York City, and the other way that the things are tied together is Jessica Jones is sought out to be hired to find a missing husband who is involved with Midland Circle, as we'll come to find out. We start off pretty strong. You know, we knew from the beginning that we weren't going to jump right into the team up from the word go. We had to, you know, when we left all of these characters and their individual seasons, they were hither and thither. We knew it was going to take some time and effort to get them back together again. So I thought, and I'm just going to go ahead and say, I think the first four episodes of this series are very strong. And if I had only watched the first four episodes, I'd have been very happy. I actually really, really enjoy half of this series, the first half. It's the second half where I start to bang my head on the table. What did you think of episode one?
I agree with you. It's a relatively strong enough setup because, you know, we have to get to know these characters as they are now. You know, we left them in various positions. In the case of Luke Cage, meaninglessly in prison. And I only say meaninglessly because, well, everybody and their dog knew he would be out on the first episode of The Defenders. It really just invalidates so much of anything they tried to get with an emotional impact at the end of that show.
Yeah.
Assuming it was successful in that respect at all. And since Mark was stealing my phrase, I'll go ahead and try to steal it back. Your mileage may vary.
It's a good phrase.
It is. I can't remember where I stole it from, but it's one of those that's been around forever. Anyway, I like that all the characters are in reasonable places. With them, you know, Jessica is desperately trying not to draw more attention to herself because, you know, she doesn't want attention.
She done killed a man.
To be fair, it was only David Tennant.
I
But she's just, you know, celebrity averse to begin with. It's kind of by nature of who she is. You've got, you know, Luke Cage getting out of prison and immediately, like you do if you have a partner, you know, does what everyone says they'll do as soon as they get out of prison. And if you don't want to take my word for it, take Mark's. He works in a prison. Jail, excuse me. But he wants to go back to helping people, and he's encouraged to actually help people, not fight crime, for whatever that's worth. Murdoch is trying to deal with... Can I just say, I don't know if I'm not sure how to feel about the way they treated Daredevil's kind of character arc as far as it relates to the people he interacts with. And I want to get more into that as we go further along. But he's essentially given up the costume because the Kingpin, I don't know. It's never really explained why he's, like, giving it up.
It is explained. It's a very simple explanation. His girlfriend done died. And he has enormous guilt that he carries with him. And he has decided, you know, being the Daredevil has driven away Foggy, it's driven away Karen, and it got Elektra killed. So he has declared the Daredevil to be a thing of evil, and he's given up being such a thing. It only brings hurt and pain to those he loves. That was relatively evident.
Okay, if that's what you got out of it, then okay. My take on it is more anyway, to close that out, you have the Iron Fist still trying to fight the Hand because it's all he knows how to do.
Well, he went back to Kunlun, and Kunlun went on the walkabout, so what else, you know, and he doesn't want to be the head of Rand Enterprises, so what's there left to do?
Well, he's not equipped to be the head of... to be fair, he's not equipped to be even like a mid-level executive in a, you know, multi-billion dollar corporation.
It's true. He has to put on shoes first and tighten and zip up that shirt. All right, let's go into episode 2 here. Mean Right Hook. Now, for the rest of this, just to keep the details straight, I'm going to read from the Wikipedia page, but I'm going to read it with feeling. Jones calls the police, but Knight sees her taking some of the evidence as she leaves the scene. Cage follows some leads on local kids and finds them being sent to clean up a workshop where several enemies of the Hand have been moited. Rand and Wing are also investigating the workshop, leading to a fight between Rand and Cage. I'm the Immortal Lion. Oh, so you are. Which only ends when the police arrive. The mysterious woman Alexandra is informed that her group's plans have been halted by a mystical wall. I still think this is the stupidest thing ever. Alexandra believes this may be actually a door and interrogates an old enemy, Stick, who then cuts off his hand to get away. Poor old Stick. Jones is warned off her investigation by lawyer Jerry Hogarth for who knows what the fuck reason, who later tells Nelson to keep any fallout from Jones' actions away from their firm. Jones returns to her apartment to find the missing man, John Raymond. They are attacked by Elektra, but he kills himself first. And then Jones chases Elektra, but is caught and arrested by Knight. Moidock arrives soon to serve as Jones's lawyer, having made an agreement with Nelson to carry out some of his extra work. And this is where we see that scene. Hello, I'm your lawyer. Who? All right. Again, more setup. We start to get into the meat of the plot of this thing. We are building towards all of these. You know, we've already got Luke Cage and Iron Fist meeting here. We've got on the other side of the coin, we've got Daredevil and Jessica Jones meeting. You know, we are starting to build something here. We are mixing things up. We are stirring the pot. Mean Right Hook, what did you think of this one in 50 words or less?
They went really hard towards trying to bring together, you know, Cage and Danny very quickly. And fortunately, those two, as we'll see in subsequent episodes, those two have the appropriate chemistry for what you would imagine if you're a longtime comic book fan and you, you know, your primary, sorry, not primary, you remember Heroes for Hire, which was the team-up squad between Danny Rand and Luke Cage. And it does make me hope, even though I'm fairly sure they won't do it, but I do almost hope that we get a Heroes for Hire 2 of them. Because they have the appropriate chemistry.
I prayed that when Luke Cage was over, they would just be frickin' patient, let Iron Fist have his series, and then say, all right, they're not getting their own series. They're going to get a combined series called Heroes for Hire. I was hoping. Oh, boy, was I hoping. It's actually the next episode where they do the where they do the bit in Colleen's apartment where he says, "Who are you?" And I was like, "I am the Immortal Iron Fist." Luke Cage goes, "You know what the hell now? What are you? What's going on here?" That's actually episode 3, Worst Behavior. Anything else on episode 2 though before we move on?
At this point, and this is one of my gripes with the series, they do a good job of maintaining each of these characters as their own independent entities. And when they're separate, their individual segments actually feel very much like parts of their own series. You know, you have Jessica doing the hard-boiled PI stuff. You have Luke Cage just trying to do right by the poor kids in the neighborhood. You have Murdoch struggling with who he is as a lawyer, how he relates to being Daredevil, and you have Danny Rand single-mindedly fighting the Hand because, let's face it, he's been brainwashed.
One, I have to say, one thing that sort of annoyed me, and it gets resolved at the end of episode 4, but Jessica Jones is a little too no for me. You know, she's sitting there. She's got blood all over her. She's, you know, possibly being fingered for a murder. She's definitely stolen evidence from a crime scene. That's a crime in and of itself, which I don't know what universe this is. But if you interfere in an investigation by stealing evidence, that's tampering, and it's punishable by time.
This is the same universe where Marshala Ali can set off a rocket launcher in the middle of Harlem and no one cares. All right?
Okay, maybe I'm being a tad nitpicky, but they're just like, oh, well, you tampered with my crime scene and got one of my leads killed. Don't do it again. What the fuck? But, you know, in walks Matt Murdock, who says, I'm your lawyer, and she basically tells him to eat shit and die. Like, lady, you're up for several crimes here, possibly more. Take the lawyer! Take the lawyer! Later on when they're all like, I'm not looking for super friends, and I don't want to get involved in this, and the Hand is too much of a deal, and I'm a big pussy and can't handle shit. Okay, I get all that. And that's what makes for drama, and that's what makes for tension, and, you know, and we have to give them obstacles, internal and external, to overcome in order to make the series interesting. Fine, I understand how stories work. Jessica Jones, I feel like she's a little too resistant, and it got on my nerves after a while, and until it was resolved, you know, with gusto at the end of episode 4, the behavior irritated me because I felt like to a degree I can see why this character would behave this way, but to a larger degree this is highly illogical. You know, there's no self-preservation here in what she's doing. She's acting like a complete asshole for no good reason.
There's a significant difference between a reluctant hero and an overly reluctant hero. And in this series, Jessica strays a little bit over the line towards overly reluctant.
Yeah. Worst Behavior, Episode 3. Months ago, the Hand acquired the ancient weapon, the Black Sky, which is the body of Elektra, and used the last of their resources to resurrect her. Under Alexandra's tutelage, the Black Sky was prepared to fight as a weapon against the Hand's enemies. Now Jones dismisses Murdoch's help, but he becomes interested in her case and begins investigating it himself. Cage tells his girlfriend, Claire Temple, about his fight with Rand, whom she knows. Temple organizes a meeting between the two, hoping they can work together to fight the Hand. But they clash over their respective backgrounds. Inspired, and this is where the plot thickens, inspired by some of Cage's comments, Rand decides to take a different approach and uses his corporate influence to find the Hand's new front, Midland Circle. Cage visits the mother of one of the local kids that the Hand hired, while Jones investigates Raymond's job. They also learn of a connection to Midland Circle. Cage arrives there to help Rand fight the Hand, soon followed by Jones and Murdoch. They are attacked by the Black Sky, but Rand drives her off. Okay, so this is the very famous part of the marketing campaign where they're all fighting in the hall. This is the bit where Rand walks in, and I'll talk about this in just a second, but this whole episode builds up to this one fight. This is the hallway fight of there's always one. This is the hallway fight of this series,
one.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hang on, there's not always one. I don't think Jessica Jones had one.
Close enough. There's always some sort of stylized fight in almost every one of these, and this is it for this one. Rand walks into an all-white room and for some odd reason is addressing a room full of people that look like they're, you know, they're executives but turn out to be thugs because I don't understand why they all have weapons there and attack him. In any case, he walks in there and says, "I am the Immortal Lion Fist," and they say, "So you are." And then they all attack him, at which point Luke Cage walks in, not using a door, just walks through the wall or some shit like that.
Well, he can't.
Daredevil shows...
Come on. You would, Mark, you would walk through every wall possible if you had that ability.
Oh, I'd never use a door in my life if I had that kind of power. Are you kidding me? I'm not criticizing. In any case, he walks in, Daredevil walks in, Jones, they all converge. They have a big-ass fight, and they fight their way out of Midland Circle, and that's the end of the episode, and it leads right into the next one, which is Royal Dragon, which is my favorite episode of the entire series, by the way. Let's just talk about this for a second, and I want your opinion. Again, it was a nice fight. In a series full of kung fu fighting that was fast as lightning, this is at least one of the more fun fights. It's the one that everyone was waiting for when you saw the marketing campaign. It's the one that was in all the commercials. It's all well and good. Who the fuck were all those people? Why were they sitting in that room? And can't the writers come up with a better thing for Danny Rand to do than to give nonsensical speeches to people who aren't executives but are thugs? And if they're thugs, why are they all wearing suits and hanging out in the room? Like, did he interrupt a meeting of some sort where they were all going to go out on a mission? Like, it was – I feel like it was conceptualized as – because, again, it shows up in all the marketing. So I feel like – you know, in a writer's room somewhere, they got together and said, "Okay, we want to do this thing where Danny confronts a room full of people and they all turn on him. Huzzah!" You know, and pull out their sticks and proceed to beat him senseless. And then he's saved by the defenders and ta-da, the defenders! Without giving any thought as to who these people are, why are they in the room, why are they carrying weapons? Are they, again, are they thugs or are they executives? I don't know too many executives that break into kung fu fighting for no apparent reason. So explain it to me.
This is one of those things that I get your point, but of course they're thugs. The people who actually run Midland Circle are the higher ups of the Hand.
Okay, both of them.
Hang on.
What were they doing 5 minutes before Danny Rand walked in? Were they all just on their phones? Were they all just hanging out in there? Listen, hang out in this room just in case one of the superheroes in New York City shows up and starts making insane demands of us.
No, but as soon as he walked into the building, they probably set that up then.
Okay, they were like, code red, get all the thugs currently running around the building, you know, harassing interns and CPAs and whatnot.
Well, here's the other thing. You are also never going to put the legitimate the actual face of your power and leadership in that room. Ever. You throw a thug in there who knows the line that he's supposed to say in the event that it has to actually be said. You have a, you know, a figurehead, a moron, a patsy.
But Alexandria was in the room. And then she said, get him, boy.
She entered the room
and suddenly
after
we turned
she made
into,
aware that... hang on.
Please, no, hang on, because you're stepping on my joke. So she says, get him, boys, and suddenly we turn into Batman 66. Pow, biff, boom.
Mark, that's not funny. Adam West is dead.
Boo. Come on, we got 20 minutes here. Get going here. Explain to me... what the fuck we're doing in this room.
You have it's a presentation. It's not legitimate, but it's there in case some moron, some random individual from another major corporation shows up unannounced. You need to have the illusion, the presentation of business as usual. And then he comes in and actually says, I am the immortal Iron Fist, and oh, wait, you're actually the guy we need. Hi.
You're the one we've been sitting in this room waiting for. Hot damn.
Yeah, we've actually spent tons and tons of time and energy looking for you. Thank you.
I just wanted two of them to be off to the side, though, and I didn't think this would actually happen. Here's your dollar that I bet.
Eh. If they'd given the hand as an organization any personality, it would have.
All right. Any other than my nitpicking at the fights, at what was clearly a cobbled together fight scene for the purposes of bringing this group together and nothing more. Any thoughts on worst behavior? If not, we got to move on to the best episode of the entire series, Royal Dragon.
I like that everybody arrived at Midland Circle of their own volition via their own means. They all found their own evidence as to why this was an important thing. And yeah, it converged with a degree of convenience for the heroes, but that always happens. And the question becomes whether or not it's believable or whether or not it's stupid. And the fact that they all got there on their own makes it a little bit more believable. So I liked that. I liked the fight scene, being, me. This is the first indicator, however, and this was my big gripe when they cast Kristen Ritter. I had no doubts whatsoever about her acting ability, and they mitigated most of this in the actual Jessica Jones series by having her deal with a man that didn't actually engage in physical combat. But while she's a more than capable enough actress to pull off damaged person, she can't throw a punch to save her life.
Well, they at least address that later on when she says, what am I, the only one in New York City who doesn't know Kung Fu?
I don't even need her to know, I don't need anything other than, if you want to be believably, beginner or believably inept, fine. I just show that you actually know how to throw a punch or a kick, and she at no point indicates that
Why?
She can.
No, I disagree with you. I wholeheartedly disagree. Her character is one that is the ultimate reluctant superhero. She's not somebody, and before you run me over, remember, up to this point, as you even said, she hasn't had to deal with anybody with any kind of combat experience. It's not like she's out there fighting ninjas, at least not yet, not before this series. She's not fighting people. She's not dealing in hand-to-hand combat. She's an overpowered individual among mortals. She doesn't have to know how to fight because she can throw people across the room and they'll be unconscious. So, again, if you are somebody
my issue is not with the character not knowing how to fight.
Okay.
It's with the fact that the actress clearly does not know how to fight.
What difference does it make then? If the character doesn't know how to fight, first of all, how do you know that Kristen Ritter isn't a third-degree black belt? You don't.
Because I've because I have now seen her kicking technique.
But she's playing a character. And the character doesn't know how to fight.
Mark, this is one of those things that even if you have any inkling of how to fight, even when you're told fight like you don't know how to fight, there's still things you do that just at this point have become such common sense muscle memory.
You think the showrunners of the Defenders are invested of such knowledge?
To me, this is just you hired someone in a superhero role with no ability to believably engage in anything approaching an action sequence.
I have to now add time on the clock here because you and I are fucking verbose, so we're gonna go a little longer than I had intended. But I'm also not gonna fight you. Her fighting style or lack thereof was offensive to you. Got it. is that all, sir?
Yeah, that's kind of it. Anything else about this episode that bothered me? No, I don't think there was anything else. I mean, I agree with you in general throughout this one, but let's get on to Royal Dragon, where things happen.
Okay. Royal Dragon. This is, again, a big part of the marketing campaign. This is, like, is that shrimp? No, that guy, that's not shrimp. That guy's got pork. Rand, Cage, Jones, and Murdoch escape to a nearby restaurant to hide out. With everyone introduced, Rand proposes they work as a team to defeat the Hand. But Murdoch is unwilling to get involved, and Jones leaves. Stick escapes from the Hand and finds the group, having already known Murdoch and known of Rand. He explains that a long time ago, the elders of Kunlun came together to study the healing powers of Qi? It says QI here. I don't know what that's supposed to be.
It's Qi.
I assume it's Qi. Okay. But five among them wished to use this power to live forever and were cast out. They became the five fingers of the Hand and include Alexandra, who has gone by many names throughout centuries, Madame Gao, Swandi, who has been recruiting the kids in Harlem, Murakami, and the recently deceased Bakuto, Matata. Now the Hand have defeated all that oppose them except for Stick and the Iron Fist. Alexandra arrives in office to spare New York if Rand leaves with her, since their plan requires the Iron Fist, but he rejects her offer. Joan realizes that the Raymond family is still in danger and returns to help as the Black Sky attacks. So this is somewhat of a timeout episode. It's an opportunity for the characters to mingle and get to know one another. There's some exposition here as delivered by Stick. We have some fun interactions. You know, like, sit down, shut the hell up. And the next thing you know, Jessica Jones is out the door. By herself, you know, she goes back to her apartment. She gets on the computer. She starts to figure some things out. And she suddenly realizes that, she goes back and interacts with the family of whoever the architect was, John Raymond, his family. She realizes what they all come to realize, and that is that until the Hand is dealt with, nobody they know is safe. And so she has a great little line at the end of the episode where she kicks a car or something through the window, which hits Elektra, and she says, "Hey, did you miss me?" Good stuff. Lots of fun interactions between Luke Cage and Danny Rand. This is the episode where Murdoch is the reluctant superhero, you know, having lost Elektra to the Hand and realizing that the Hand is not to be screwed with. He doesn't even want to get involved, and Stick kind of has to remind him of his duty and that this is never going to end unless he ends it himself. It's a great episode. This is my favorite. This is the highlight of the series. This is the peak of the rising action. After this, it's all downhill. Those are my thoughts on Royal Dragon, such as they are. What did you think of this episode?
There's a lot of fun interactions between all the characters. I think we get pretty much every one of them at some point And we get every reasonable permutation of these characters, and they all have interesting interactions. This is also where we start to get into some of my frustration with Daredevil, because they start, and this is not just him, but we get it after they all decide to fight the Hand, and I think it's the next episode where they start like convening the sidekicks in the police station. They treat him being Daredevil like he's some kind of addict. If you listen to, you know, Foggy and Karen talk about it, that's the sense that I get. This is like, oh no, he's drinking again.
I think they actually say something to the owner, you know, he's out there vigilanting again, or he's all out there daredeviling again.
Yeah, and I don't know why that bothered me the way it did, but it got really tiring really quickly.
You know, what cracks me up is, like, we just got finished reading on Source Material, which is in the archives now, Guardian Devil, where Karen is an interesting and fun and well-developed individual, and she's such a fucking pill in these shows. Like, she's on her high horse. She's very judgmental. You know, in the comic book, she's like, never stop being Daredevil. In the show, she's like, Daredevil, mercy! You know, and you can't see it, but I'm fanning myself currently. You know, like, what are
to
they,
be
like,
fair, I think I a lot of that is just this show, this series in particular, because she's been one of the highlights for me when we talk about both the first seasons of Daredevil. There's a lot good there, and then it gets kind of thrown out for the sake of he's an addict who's going to kill himself.
She's a little too Adrian from Rocky for me.
That's fair. Is there anything I really didn't like about this episode? I'm trying to think. There was something. No, that was something else. Sorry. There was something with Danny that I think bothered me, but I might be misremembering I think I'm confusing episodes is what I'm doing as far as that goes.
You know, I have to talk about this now because it's going to come up when they all turn on him. But what I like about Danny in The Defenders, and he's one of the highlights of this. I know people didn't like the character when he had his own series, but he's a little bit more confident in this one. You know, again, you have to be confident if you're going to walk around telling people that your identity is I am the Immortal Iron Fist. And, you know, again, you get that Eddie Izzard response, so sure, okay, good for you. But he's a little bit more confident here. He's also the one that's embracing the inevitable, that they must all work together. These are all overpowered individuals, and a lot of good can be done with them working together than being disparate entities working possibly against one another, depending on the situation. And I really like that about his portrayal. You know, he knows the truth. The truth is they have to work together. Whether they may have started from different areas, they are working towards a common goal. And, you know, he recognizes, more so than I think the rest of them, with the possible exception of Murdoch, how dangerous the Hand is, and that they have a rare opportunity to take the Hand out if they would only pool their resources and come up with a plan that's actually going to work. And it blows up right in his face when they suddenly realize that the Hand needs him to go to open the door to the Dragon Bones, which I think is hilarious. And it was a great little bit of acting on everyone's part. But we'll get there in a moment. But like I said, if you really hated him in the Iron Fist series, and I don't know why you would, all things being fair and equal. He turns the corner in this series and is one of the, and to me is one of the more consistent highlights of the show.
Yeah, I think it's a different one where this issue comes up, and it might actually be the one where everyone kind of goes, you know, you're what they need to win. So if we just take you off the board, essentially, they're screwed. And he goes, no, I want to fight. Like, dumbass. But I'm not quite with you in this being my favorite episode of the season, but I honestly would have to go back and rewatch each episode specifically and try to rank them. On the whole, it's a fine episode. There's a lot of, again, what really drives this whole series becomes the way these guys interact with each other. And we get some, and we get some really good stuff as far as that goes here.
Episode 5, Take Shelter. The hand converges on the restaurant. Murdoch lures Elektra away from the fight. When he calls her Elektra, she flees, but not before preventing Murakami from killing Murdoch. Cage is able to kidnap Swandi while the others escape. After Swandi warns that their loved ones will be targeted next, they convince the rest of the cast to stay in the police station, you know, because they have nothing else for them to do. While doing this, Wing is confronted by a resurrected Bakuta Matata, who unsuccessfully attempts to recruit her to his cause after raising her as a member of the Hand. Yeah, this didn't make any sense to me either, by the way, and joined with Rand. Murdoch decides to take up his daredevil identity once again. This is where you get the cute bit about nice ears, their horns, yuck, yuck, yuck. Something that concerns the leaders of the Hand due to his relationship with Elektra. Murakami questions Alexandria's reliance on Elektra to complete their goals and notes that they can all be killed now that their resources were used on Elektra. He suggests that they devise a new plan without Alexandra, stick decapitate Swandi when he attempts to escape capture. All right, here's where we start the sitting around episodes. Lots of sitting around here. Sitting around a warehouse, getting threatened by Swandi. We'll have other episodes where they're sitting around watching Danny, and they're sitting around doing this, and it's a lot of sitting around by the defenders. It didn't make for very interesting television. I wasn't a fan. What'd you think?
There's things about this that I liked. And again, this kind of goes back to what is the actual strength of this show. The way even, you know, the different worlds interact as everyone is kind of being brought into the police station for protection, it all kind of works as far as that goes. There's a lot of fun to be had with, you know, how they get along with each other, assuming they do, and some of them don't.
But they don't do anything with it. They mostly stay on their own little islands. Karen talks to Foggy. What's her face? Hellcat talks with the whatever guy from Jones's world. Luke Cage doesn't have. Claire. Claire is the only one that mixes up with everybody, and I think she mostly talks with Colleen, who actually has stuff to do later on in the series.
Yeah, as far as Swandi goes, that drug on a little bit. I did get a kick out of Murdoch putting the costume back on, even though again we get, and again my personal gripe with this, even though again it's, you know, they're treating him like this is his addiction, but beyond that, this is a lot more setup, and unfortunately, there's a lot more setup still to come.
Episode 6, Ashes, We All Fall Down. Now realizing the Hand wants the Iron Fist as a key to unlock something, the group decides to hide and ran away while they continue to fight. This was fantastic. Again, I wasn't crazy about the last 4 episodes, but this I liked because, you know, there's an art to directing actors, and when you and there's an art to directing the camera and how you capture things, and this was very well done. I mean, almost cartoonish. It rode that line because you have Danny who suddenly realizes, hey, wait a minute, they're trying to keep me hostage. And then you have the, you know, the other three kind of looking at each other going, yeah, he's got that glowing hand, but we need to keep him here. It's all very well done. You know, get him. Great. I didn't enjoy that. I thought it was an interesting twist also. You know, with three more episodes to go, or two more episodes after this one to go, they needed something to do with Danny. They needed to give him some stuff to do. And, you know, being captured by his own team, I thought was an interesting twist. What a twist. So Stick watches over him while Jones and Murdoch continue the investigation of Raymond. Elektra begins to regain some of her memories from her previous life. But Alexandra insists that she is not that person anymore. Meanwhile, back in the city, the other leaders of the Hand learn of Sawandi's death and continue to lose faith in Alexandra's leadership, and I don't blame them. Murdoch and Jones learn that there is something beneath Midland Circle, a hole to which Murdoch had come across previously when dealing with the Hand, which I did not remember. They return to the group with plans of attacking the building to find Stick attempting to murder Rand, like you do, to keep the Hand from using him.
Hang on. That's not a like you do kind of moment.
No, sure it is.
It's perfectly in character for him to have been, you know, dedicated his whole life to fighting.
I don't
and
have
he's
a problem
got the opportunity
this. This
to forever
things.
Shut down
I,
their
I,
plans by killing one guy. Like, yeah, he can take that.
Wait a minute. I was perfectly okay with this. I don't know why you're picking at me. Anyway, Elektra, who has made a habit of this throughout the series, interrupts the whole nonsense, kills Stick, and takes Rand. Alexander gloats to the leaders about this victory, but then is murdered by Elektra. What a twist! And claims leadership of the Hand.
Okay, here's your Vince Russo swerve, right? And you get like three of them in one episode, so you know it's a Vince Russo.
Yeah, this is the writers going, well, we've run out of shit for Sigourney Weaver to do. Let's just kill her.
And rather than actually make it interesting, because Elektra is, again, Roman Reigns / Pucci, it's got to be her.
Yeah, not Madame Gao, not Murakami, not all of them ganging up on her, you know, ripping her to pieces like dogs. Nope, got to be Elektra. Suddenly Elektra is standing beside you, stabbing you with a sword. All right. You got anything on this one?
I liked that they actually saw Stick's character arc through. This is a soldier who is, you know, been fighting this war his whole life, is documented as being willing to do anything. And that includes sacrificing the Iron Fist, because if Kunlun's not really accessible, and the Iron Fist dies, the power of the Iron Fist goes back to the corpse of Shao Lao, and they can no longer have access to the chi of the Iron Fist or any future Iron Fist, so the Hand is going to be thwarted. And I like that.
I love the fact that even in this series, we continue the trend of Danny Rand as the dumbest Iron Fist to date.
Something they actually say repeatedly.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and again, that was like my big gripe with when they say, no, he's the key. He is literally what we need to win. Without him, we can't win. And everyone else's response is, well, okay, then clearly the most important thing we can do is, you know, make sure that never happens. Now, the other's response isn't exactly murder, because they're not Stick, but it makes sense. And he's like, no, I'm supposed to fight. I want to fight. And everyone else is like, dude, not right now. This is actually the worst thing you could possibly do. and he can't see past his ego and pride and whatnot to actually understand the wisdom in that.
Yes, he has an Anakin Skywalker moment, which inevitably proves them right, because later on, as we'll see, he does open the door to, you know, the cave of the dead dragons. And I still think that's the stupidest thing ever. But number 7, Fish in the Jailhouse. Jones, Murdoch, and Cage wake up in the police precinct as suspects for the murders of Swande and Stick. They tell Knight about the hand, but try not to go into details or let her get involved, much to the chagrin of her superiors. The remaining fingers of the hand agree to let Elektra pursue her goals, hoping that she will grant them access to the substances they need to avoid death. She takes Rand below the building to the mystical door they need him to open. Jones, Murdoch, and Cage escape the precinct and go to the Midland Circle, where they are confronted by Gal, Bakudo, Matata, and Murakami. Wing soon arrives to help, bringing with her the explosives that Raymond had been stockpiling. The group drives the fingers of the hand away. Knight and Temple arrive soon, and Knight agrees to stall the police while the others get Rand. Elektra tricks Rand into opening the door because he's a moron, causing a blast that knocks out the power throughout the city. Rand awakens beneath the skeleton of a dragon.
It's Shao Lao.
By the time we got to... Oh, is that what it was? Okay. By the time we got to this episode, I just want...
He has a chest tattoo. This is clearly...
I don't know. Could have been Pete's dragon for all I knew.
Pete's dragon is not a real dragon and kind of sucks.
Neither is Shao Lao.
Shao Lao's the... You've actually read the comics. I shouldn't have to explain to you the importance of Shao Lao.
Yeah, it's been a while. In the last Iron Fist comic I read, he turns into a building. A building, okay? I don't want to talk about it.
No. Now you have to, because that sounds hilarious.
just read the comic that we did when Iron Fist came out, and you'll understand that a building fought a demon.
You know, I could get behind that. I really could.
It was the worst comic we've read this year, with the possible exception of Wacky Raceland. It was terrible. It's been the bar by which we judge other comics.
Anyway, as far as this episode goes, I don't have a whole lot of complaints. Again, you have Danny Rand just... Danny is frustrating as a viewer because... Well, he's an adult. He's the emotional equivalent of a teenager. And to be fair, this makes sense. I mean, the guy was raised since he was a preteen by monks. Of course, he's got some emotional growth issues. Who wouldn't under his circumstances? But still, there's a reason nobody likes watching teenagers.
All right.
Beyond that, I liked the fight that took place between the fingers and the defenders that showed up. I liked the way they leave this episode with Colleen showing up with a bag of C4 and everyone kind of going, we're not quite sure about this.
So that's the plan, eh? Terrorism. Good. Yeah, I thought that was fun, too. I don't know if it's this episode or the next one where fucking Misty there loses her arm. No, it's the next,
it's the next one.
8, The Defenders, The Glorious Conclusion. Gao explains to Rand that, like he gained the power of the Iron Fist from a dragon. The substance that the hand uses for the resurrection comes from the bones of Shao. What is it? Shao Lao?
Yes.
Shout out. Wu Tang. Flame of the stupid dragon.
Yeah, right. It's Shao Lao.
Okay. The hand begins harvesting the skeleton, and Gao notes that this will weaken the foundations of the city and cause widespread destruction. All right.
That's where... Hang on. Can I... If I may, that's where they kind of lost me as far as this goes.
Yeah, that's why I was just like, uh-huh. And again, we're just writing things and hoping nobody bothers to deconstruct it.
I mean, I'm fine with stopping the hand because they need to be stopped. I'm fine with the hand utilizing the bones of a mystic dragon to perpetuate their life. I'm down with all of this. That being said, the graveyard that contains Shaolau is very explicitly in Kunlun, which is the only thing about Kunlun that they actually bother to explain. And how doing this weakens the foundation of the island of Manhattan is never properly explained.
It just is.
It almost felt like the showrunners felt they needed a big, like, citywide potential catastrophe to bring these guys together, and they just didn't. It was utterly unnecessary.
Now, they started with the earthquake bit, and then they never really went back to it, and then it was, oh, dead dragon. Okay. Good. Wing and Temple place the explosives so as to destroy the building once others escape. And they are confronted by Makuto Matata, who cuts off Knight's arm when she arrives to help, like you do. Wing kills Makuto, but his body sets off the timer for the explosives. Jones, Murdoch, and Cage arrive in the cabin to help Randall. We have our glorious final fight scene as they fight off all 500 members of the Hands that happen to be together. When Murdoch realizes the explosives are about to go off, he gets the others to leave immediately. He then proceeds to have an hour and a half fight with Elektra, which basically ends with the building exploding around them, as well as Gao and Murakami. The entire situation is covered up. Rand, Jones, and Cage look to move on with their lives, protecting the city, and Murdoch wakes up in a nunnery. And that's how we end The Defenders. Let me go ahead and say this again. This was pretty weak in terms of a compelling story. It's well acted, and if you're into kung fu fighting, there's certainly enough of it to satisfy your palate. I'm not so much into the kung fu fighting. This was my complaint with the other shows. Is after a while, I get tired of people punching one another. So I'm not always the best person to judge, but dare I say, this show drags in the second half. So on the plus side, well acted, lots of fun fights. The event itself is noteworthy. On the negative side, the plot is weak. It drags in the middle towards the end, and there's no good villain to really become interested in. Sigourney Weaver tries, but isn't given anything to do, and Elektra, again, is a video game boss.
Elektra's
there's
Roman Reigns.
To her.
No one actually cares, but the people in charge think that people should think she's interesting.
You know, I'm much more interested in Madame Gao, who they didn't do a whole lot with. But at least she's been an interesting character up to this point. So those are my final thoughts on The Defenders. Why don't you give me your 50 words or less on this thing?
There's things about the finale that I liked. I did like the final fight scene, apart from, guess who, Kristen Ritter. And even, like... Again, my minor issues like that aside, I liked that the hand, when Elektra took over, their response was, you know, we should really just let this play out. I mean, we can deal with her, but at the moment, our interests are in alignment, and as soon as that's done, we can deal with her and move on, and we'll all be in a better place. I mean, that doesn't work out, but I actually liked that they had that type of reaction. It fits with who they've been portrayed as. Let me think. Bakudo and Colleen's bit gets old by this episode. Their relationship, I felt, had actually reached its organic conclusion by the end of Iron Fist, and we didn't need it rehashed. sadly it was rehashed. I sincerely wish that they hadn't shown Murdoch being alive at the end of this. Not because I don't want him to be, because I do, and I've enjoyed Charlie Cox and his version of Daredevil. I've enjoyed the Daredevil show. Not perfect, but I've enjoyed it. And so you knew he was not actually dead, in large part because it's Marvel. No one actually dies. Except for Uncle Ben. And I just wish that his sacrifice would have been allowed to mean more with him staying gone for at least the first episode of Daredevil Season 3. I like that they just covered everything up. I mean, it might feel a little contrived in some respects, but in others, the city is still like, I mean, New York as an entity, as far as the show goes, is still trying to process in some respects, you know, how we deal with the reality brought about by Tony Stark's giant ego. And so when something that is half inexplicable, you know, half superheroes that are trying to stay out of the spotlight and everyone just kind of agrees that this never happened, we were never here, I can see that. It makes sense. My biggest gripe here is that Murdoch's sacrifice winds up being, I'm still trying to get through to Elektra, because it's always, whenever Elektra's not on screen, everyone else should be constantly asking where Elektra is, much like Poochie or Triple H or Roman Reigns.
Yes. Take a drink, everyone.
I liked that he actually got some sort of resolution to that at the end when he and Elektra are fighting. He does kind of remark that, you know, this is just what we were always going to be. Each of us convinced that we could make it work and neither of us being right. So hopefully A, Elektra's dead, but B, if she isn't, we don't get another rehash of, you know, Matt never got any sense of closure and feels guilt over this. Because
suddenly Elektra is standing beside you. Oh, look, Zemo. Suddenly Zemo.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But apart from that, I liked the way things ended. You know, everyone trying to go back to their lives, but everyone having clearly been affected by what transpired, because if it doesn't have any impact, then you didn't actually do anything. And I agree with you that, you know, this kind of drags towards the middle. I feel like if they had made this just 6 episodes instead of 8, there's a really great, like, 6 episode show in here somewhere.
I totally agree with that. I honestly think 8 episodes might have been a smidge too long. That cut this down by 2 episodes, cut out all the sitting around with Swanee and whatnot, and you know, let's get to it already. Let's also establish earlier that what we're after is Dragon Bones. That all felt like they were just writing this without any clear view as to where they were going, and then somebody was like, well, we need a reason for the hand to be doing all these things. The skeleton of Shao Lao. Okay.
To be like, fair, is perfectly fine if it's actually established.
But that's my point. Waiting until the second to last episode to bring it up instead of establishing it very early on, I thought was not the right way to do this.
Here's the other thing about this, and this elements of this go to all the Netflix shows. I understand, you know, leaving things to the imagination, leaving threads, especially if you're doing an ongoing series like this. Unfortunately, I think all the Netflix series have been guilty of overusing, you know, keeping the audience in the dark.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with having your villain say right up front, I am after a thing. The thing will make me complete, and I will take over the universe. Right from the get-go. You know, I keep saying how they completely and utterly wasted Sigourney Weaver in this show. And she's such a talented actress. You could have had her say at the beginning, when they established that she was dying, she, you know, she should have been the one to say. I mean, everyone's mad at her for using, I guess the ashes of the dragon.
They processed the bone somehow to get that red liquid.
Okay, so we'll just go ahead and say the dragon bones. They're all mad at her for using the last of the dragon bones that they had on Elektra. She should have been the one to say that at the beginning. They were like, you know, I've sacrificed my own life to bring about the black sky. Because it is the black sky that will lead us to victory. Though they never say how, by the way. They never say exactly what having the black sky is supposed to do for them. They go, well, to defeat our enemies. You didn't have many enemies before this. What, you know, by the time they got around to resurrecting her, who the fuck was left? Stick. That was it.
Yeah, this is one of those things where it's one thing to have a cryptic prophecy. It's another thing to have a cryptic prophecy that you, as the narrator, are then cryptic about. It's needless levels of nobody understands what's going on here.
It would have been one thing if her mission in life was to kill the Iron Fist.
Yeah,
you know,
which would have made so much sense. Like, I mean, I am the immortal Iron Fist. Well, my enemy is the Hand. Well, the Hand have a trump card to the Iron Fist.
Right.
It is the Black Sky.
You know, a much tighter story would have been something along the lines of Danny knows exactly what Alexandria wants, is aware of who she is, and has been hot on her trail and can't seem to find her because he knows exactly what she's after. And he should have been running around telling people, look, there's a fucking dragon skeleton beneath New York City. I don't know where, though, and all I know is the Hand wants it because that's how they're going to be immortal. And oh, fuck, here comes Elektra ready to kill me. You know, it should have been the Black Sky was their last-ditch attempt to get the Iron Fist off their trail because he's close to shutting them down. That's, again, a much tighter story than the one they came up with if this is what they were going to go with. I still would have preferred something else, but I don't have another hour to I've already put out there what my idea for the Defenders was, and it involved Ghost Rider and Doctor Strange. So we don't need to go through that again. But if you're going to do the silly story with the Hand, that was a better way to do it.
If your idea was involved Ghost Rider, which version of Ghost Rider?
Oh, the original one. The what's-his-face.
Oh, thank you.
Johnny Blaze. Took me a minute. All right, we've only got a little bit of time here. 50 more words or less on the Defenders, and then we're going to wrap this up.
I don't feel bad about watching it. I think there were certainly ways to improve it, but it was not awful. That said, until they have a cohesive vision for these guys as a group, they are stronger off as individuals.
Yeah, dear Marvel, don't do this again. And what I mean by this is, don't decide you're going to do a Defender series and not have a clear vision of what that series is supposed to be. Just don't do it. I would prefer no more Defenders if you're just going to fly by the seat of your pants. I agree wholeheartedly with Robert. Keep these as individual series. Let them tell their own stories. And until you come up with a better idea of how they should come back together, don't make them come back together. This wasn't all that thrilling. You know, it wasn't terrible by any means. It wasn't terrible by any means, but I didn't love it, and it could have been so much better.
Also, let's all get hyped for the Punisher.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. The jury's out. All right, with that said, This week here on the Rattlevision Broadcasting Network, we, as I said before, we did a Daredevil book on Monday in celebration of the Defenders. We did Guardian Devil, which was written by Kevin Smith. You know, that Kevin Smith, the guy who did Clerks. Tomorrow on the Metal Hammer of Doom, we'll be reviewing KMFDM, Hell Yeah, the latest album. And again, in celebration of the Defenders, we've got an on-trial for the Ben Affleck Daredevil. Yes, yes, I know, Daredevil sucks and is indefensible. Well, we're going to do it. We're going to put it on trial anyway, and Sean's going to do his damnedest. Next week, right here on TV Party Tonight, we'll actually be looking at the first season of Game of Thrones, and I believe I will have Pat on. Yes, Pat Mullen will be on to discuss the first season of Game of Thrones. Metal Hammer of Doom will be reviewing the new Haunted album, and I will be taking Thursday, the August 31st off because I can. The following week, we've got, assuming Robert can find it somewhere, Damn You Hollywood will be looking at the Inhumans in IMAX, which is the first two episodes, I believe, of the ABC series. And then the rest of the week
I think
is...
I do believe I have a IMAX theater close enough to do that, and it just makes me sad.
We'll be looking at the Paul Jenkins run on the Inhumans on Source Material. And then the second half of the week is Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll Part 2. We'll be looking at Quiet Riot on the Metal Hammer of Doom. And then Pat Mullen will be back for another TV party, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll Season 2, the final season, as it were. And then
people stop
we've got
hiring Dennis Leary. That would be nice.
And then the following week, we've got a pair of IT shows, one for Damn You Hollywood and the new IT, and then the on-trial for the original IT that came out many, many years ago. I'm sure after that week, I will never sleep again. But such is life. All right, go ahead. If you haven't had a chance, I'll go ahead and plug it for you. If you haven't had a chance, Robert and Pat did about 90 minutes on the Mayweather-McGregor fight. I actually listened to it. And after a bit of editorializing, just a smidgen, they actually broke down the finer points of the fight itself. It's a good listen. And for those of you who are interested in watching this farcical nonsense, you should give it a listen and see why this is a circus and not a fight. But I'll let you go ahead and do your own plug, sir.
Yeah, Sunday, I honestly wasn't even going to do one of these. For this event, it's just so stupid that I had no interest in actually talking about Mayweather McGregor. But it occurred to me that Mark, you know, you put up with a lot of my crap, and this would draw some hits. So in the interest of, you know, living in the real world where topical things should be discussed in a reasonable manner. Yeah, Pat and I previewed Mayweather McGregor after dealing with. We talked a little bit about the bad ticket sales and, you know, a few of the other things that have gone on around it. Then we actually talked about what we think will happen. There's very few jokes, no gimmicks. That was my thing. No gimmicks, no jokes, no frills. We've made our editorialized opinions about this whole thing well known. Let's set that aside and just talk about how we think this is going to go. So that's what we did, and feel free to listen to it. Saturday, I will be covering said Mayweather-McGregor event, God help me. After that, the 411 Ground and Pound radio show will be back that Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our normal time. We'll be reviewing Mayweather-McGregor briefly, because I can't imagine there's a whole lot to talk about after it's all said and done either. And then we'll be previewing a UFC Fight Night, a Fight Pass exclusive event. I believe it is UFC 115. Apart from that, that's kind of all I've got going at the moment. So,
all right. All right.
Mark,
thank you very much.
Get us out of here.
Yes. All right. Thank you for being on the show tonight, Robert. It's been a pleasure as always. Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed our discussion of the Defenders. Hope you enjoyed the Defenders. You know, just because I didn't think it was the Cat's Pajamas doesn't mean you should hate it too. That being said, we'll see you next week. Be well, be safe, and behave.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.